Amina Qutb is a biomedical engineer. She has a lab at UTSA that studies the brain in exciting new ways using the newest technology. And she's been working on artificial intelligence, AI, since grad school, inspired by her dad.
He was an AI pioneer himself. He went to University of Madison, Wisconsin, and was one of the first students in computer science there as a graduate student, and then went on to Bell Labs, where he was studying AI when it wasn't popular in the 70s and 80s. But AI was something he introduced to me as a very young age, and I saw it as an exciting way of using my interest in math and computer science to apply to biology.
I've interviewed Dr. Qutb several times over the years, and her dad is always a part of the conversation. It is clear he was a giant in his field and a great father.
And then he had a stroke in his late 50s. He was really healthy. He had it when he was exercising. And it was a repercussion probably from a rheumatic fever as a child.
She takes a moment to note that she thinks of this when she hears of people who are facing challenges after recovering from COVID. The ripples of an illness can sometimes be felt for the rest of a person's life, with catastrophic consequences years or even decades later.
So my father had rheumatic fever, which led to changes in his heart valve. And so in his early 50s, mid-50s, he had a heart valve replacement. And though he was very active, that heart valve replacement didn't go very well, and he wasn't put on any blood thinners. He was supposed to take aspirin, he didn't take it. And then he was athletic, so he was exercising at a very high rate, and he had a massive stroke. They believe part of his heart valve broke off and clotted arteries in his brain.
Qutb's father survived this sudden stroke, but she says he was never the same.
So that led to a very, very long recovery, and not a full recovery for my father. And knowing how brilliant my father was, he's passed away now, and how his care affected his quality of life after his stroke and his recovery really was an impetus for a lot of the research I've been doing.
Which leads us back to AI, the technology her dad helped pioneer. If it had been where it is now, could it have improved the quality of her father's life following his stroke? That's a question that drives Qutb on a new collaboration in Texas that involves using AI to assist first responders as they offer trauma care in the field. So by the side of the road where people are perhaps on the edge of death after a devastating car wreck, or in the home of a person who's just had a massive heart attack, or a massive stroke.
My father had a stroke, and he wasn't diagnosed with an ischemic stroke, which is what he had. And he wasn't given what's called TPA, one of the treatments given to stroke patients, and one of the most effective ones, one of the only ones approved by the FDA, that if given in a certain window of 30 minutes to an hour or less, it can be very effective in breaking up clots and helping save people's brain and their cognition. In his case, if there had been more information and a knowledge from a computer, from an AI machine, that there are a lot of things indicating that what he had was an ischemic stroke, I think his care would have been much faster and his health outcomes and his quality of life would have been improved.
And that's what she's working on now, an AI tool she hopes will help minimize the time it takes to get appropriate care and to maximize the outcomes for patients. But AI is still a controversial tool. Will it take the art out of the science of medicine? Will trusting a machine to make medical decisions lead to lethal mistakes that a human wouldn't have made? And how long will it be before we're welcoming our AI overlords? Let's dive in. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through a team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes, from teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments. UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at everythingittakes.org.
Dr. Amita Cuttub's lab is at the University of Texas, San Antonio, much better known as UTSA. And UTSA is where we find the Matrix AI Consortium for Human Well-Being.
So Matrix is a consortium of faculty who are either developing new artificial intelligence approaches and or they're applying it in unique ways. And the focus of Matrix is on human health.
The Matrix Consortium recently got $1 million from the University of Texas system to develop and apply artificial intelligence tools to the field of trauma care. You know, we hear a lot about AI these days. It's writing some of our cover letters when we apply for jobs, for example. It's responding to our Google search requests. It's making our profile pictures look like we're in the cast of Bridgerton. But what is AI really? I asked Dr. Cuttub.
Yeah, it's inspired ways of having machines learn the way a human might, or to be able to reproduce what a human might do in terms of recognizing patterns using a machine. And it really, some of its basis came from Alan Turing and the Turing test. The idea that you could have a machine be indistinguishable from a certain number of questions from a human in its responses to those questions. But there's also this broader idea that we can think of human intelligence as adaptive and growing, and machines can start to also mimic that intelligence.
The Turing test. You may not think you know what that is, but you do, a version of it anyway. First, let's recall Alan Turing. Many of us only know about him from that Oscar-winning movie, The Imitation Game, in which he was played by Benedict Cumberbatch. But Turing was an English mathematician, logician, theoretical biologist, and cryptanalyst who helped crack Nazi codes, which was key to the Allies winning World War II. And Turing was a computer scientist who established the field of artificial intelligence. He was inarguably a genius. And a fragment of his genius that is part of our daily lives in 2024 is called the Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart. It has an acronym that you might recognize. It's CAPTCHA. And I'm sure you hate it. I'm sure you hate it because I hate it. It's that part of registering on a website that you get, you know, something like a series of squiggly, difficult-to-read letters and numbers that you have to enter to complete your registration. So CAPTCHA helps protect websites from things like spam and bots by telling computers apart from humans. It assures them that you are not a robot. That's AI, and you use it all the time.
I think where AI has shown that it has distinct and unique capabilities is more on the commercial spectra. We can use AI tools now, everyone can. So my students use it, I use it, my relatives and friends use it on a regular basis, but it's impacting our lives maybe with not the potential I'd like to see it reach.
And the potential in the area of human health, she says, is unlimited.
There's a hype in AI, which I'm sure you're aware of, hype. And there's also the promise. And a goal of what we're doing on this project is to be able to really impact lives and save lives and improve quality of life using AI. And I think the field has yet to see that, not the proof of where AI is helping impact lives in terms of quality of life and health.
So Matrix got this cool million from the Trauma Research and Combat Casualty Care Collaborative of the University of Texas system to develop and deploy AI tools to improve trauma care decisions at the scene of an accident, for example, or on the battlefield. The tool they're working on is called iRemedy Act.
So iRemedy Act is an acronym for Identification and Remediation of Delays to Definitive Care of Critically Injured Patients in the Texas Trauma System, with advances in AI to improve care for trauma. That's a big acronym. It's iRemedy Act, and it's a collaboration between UT Health Sciences trauma surgeons and directors, UT Tyler trauma researchers, and UTSA. And so on our team, we have AI experts. Jerisha Kudithmatudi, who leads the Matrix Consortium, is one of the team members. We have neurologists like Mark Goldberg. We have Brian Eastridge at UT Health Sciences, who's a trauma surgeon and leader of trauma care at UT Health Sciences. We have Alan Cook at UT Tyler, who's also a trauma researcher and developing methods to understand and visualize data for trauma.
What do they want this AI tool to be able to do?
The goal of this project is really to, within 16 months, develop a tool that can help to save lives by identifying ways to speed up care for those people who have suffered a trauma and decide on the best care in emergency cases.
Okay, so like an app that could process a ton of information, not just at the scene, but well beyond that in seconds to help first responders make better care decisions.
So if you can think of, if somebody has a stroke, there's a question of when an EMT comes to that person and identifies what type of stroke they might have, how do they do that? How do they figure out where to transport them? How quick can they transport them? What hospital is equipped to handle that patient and cover that patient's care right now? And how should you follow up with the patient? All of those now are manual decisions, largely. And AI here in iRemedy Act is being used to understand the diversity of this data that's going into trauma decisions and basically providing an autopilot, a helper to decision making for trauma care, anyone in the stream of trauma care, from EMTs to the trauma care physician.
iRemedy Act would start working as soon as someone calls 911.
So the 911 caller has to dispatch to an EMT or a medical responder and has to make a decision of who to send and what hospital the person should be. The EMT has to decide which hospital to bring that individual to. Those decisions are now more manual. It's not learning off of hundreds of data points or thousands of data points from historical data. And it's not learning in real time. So with iRemedy Act and the tools we're developing, we'd be able to say with more probability, the best response to that individual's 911 call in this emergency would be to take them to this particular hospital, to get them this care, and to use this route to drive them there.
A tool like this could potentially be used to enhance the work of healthcare practitioners at every level.
Yes, it comes out like just like an autopilot, if you can think of like in an aircraft. It's guiding the decision maker. So if it's an EMT making a decision of how to help the individual who has a stroke, it would be saying, these are the biometrics you should be taking, and this is where you should transport the person. If it's in the hospital, it should be, these are the treatments you should be giving that will optimize the person's recovery, and or this person should be transferred to another hospital that has better care. And in the beginning, the AI is not going to be able to make those decisions definitively. So it's going to be a suggestion. It's going to be another indicator on a computer monitor for the EMT, for the physician, where they get this suggestion from the AI until we start to be good and as good as the responders themselves. And then it can be something that it takes the cases which are follow a certain pattern. And then it allows the decision-making to be more manual when there's extremes and it doesn't know how to handle it. It hasn't seen a case like that before.
And that's where some people start to get nervous, right? Does greater reliance on AI in medicine mean your care is on cruise control? And if so, do we even want that? Does that take the art out of the science of medicine? Will it make mistakes?
I would say humans make mistakes. There's manual mistakes all the time. There's delays. That's why there's this need.
More on that and what it has to do with chess when Petri Dish continues.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/BHC.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri. Garry Kasparov is a Russian chess grandmaster, and he was world chess champion from 1985 to 2000. But during his reign, he lost a key tournament against an upstart of an opponent. Deep Blue was its name. It was a computer designed by IBM with a goal to beat the world's best human chess player, Kasparov. And Deep Blue first faced off in 1996. Deep Blue won the first game, but Kasparov won the match. The Deep Blue team responded by improving the computer's databases, feeding it a ton of new information on strategies and endgames and positions and even subterfuge. And in 1997, Deep Blue took all that new knowledge and beat Kasparov, who admitted the computer was far stronger than anyone expected. That's why UTSA biomedical engineer and researcher Amit Akkadab talks about chess when addressing people's concerns about the growing reliance on artificial intelligence in medicine and in life.
Chess has been one area where computers outperform humans. But it did it because it learned, the chess bots have learned from chess masters, and not just one, but many, dozens of masters over the years. And it also learns from people who aren't good chess players. So it knows the bad moves and the good moves. And then people are not, you're not saying, oh, we shouldn't use or understand how the computer is able to solve chess. It's more like we know that a person augmented by a computer's knowledge of how to play chess would be better, or a team of people augmented by the computer would be better together and have an optimal solution for a chess game. That's where I see the trauma care being augmented by AI. In the beginning, it's learning from the best practitioners or the best use cases, as well as the ones that haven't gone right. And it's saying, this is the suggestion. And it's going to be a long process to validate, to make sure that we're saving lives by the decisions that AI would make. And we learn from the mistakes and the positives. But it's always, in this year, it's going to be the clinician and the EMT still making the decision.
So, Dr. Akkadab, at least some of medicine is instinct, isn't it? It's the art of medicine. And as far as I know, AI doesn't have instincts. Do you worry that machine learning and artificial intelligence that makes decisions based solely on data points removes the art from the science of medicine?
That's a really good point. I would say that we would actually enable more time for individual care for the most complex cases, because the AI learns from patterns and largely gets better and better with more information where it has more data, but it's going to have gaps still. It's going to have complex cases where it's going to say, I only know this 50% well, or I can only predict this 30% accuracy. So those cases then would be the ones that the doctors can spend more time on. And I think now everyone probably is in agreement that the doctors don't spend enough time with an individual and they need more time to do that. And that's where I see AI augmenting rather than, I don't see it as replacing the human doctors.
But still, people do joke about the dystopian future where artificial intelligence, you know, sort of takes over and humans are forced to bow down to, you know, our AI overlords or whatever. And there's some truth to all humor, you know. How would you reassure someone who truly was concerned about this kind of thing going all wrong, particularly when we're sick or injured or otherwise at our most vulnerable?
I would say that there's a lot of care going into the thought of making this tool, as I believe there is throughout medicine. And there's a emphasis on making sure the individual clinicians who would be overseeing the care are part of this team. And so I would look for AI teams like that. It's not just this group that I'm describing. There's a lot of people around the country that are using AI together with the experts to make sure there's a careful decision on how we implement the technology. So we don't have a case where you've caused a loss of life because of the AI. I would say humans make mistakes. There's manual mistakes all the time. There's delays. That's why there's this need. And AI needs to be vetted well. It needs to show that it's as good and better. But it has that opportunity to do that now, where the technology wasn't advanced enough before a couple of years ago to do that. And also, we're our hardest critics. I would say we're not going to put it out there in the world until we are sure it's improving lives. And so those people who are worried, I would say that really it is people who are focused on using AI in medicine need to understand where it can fail. And this group and others are making sure that we have that understanding as well as knowing its potential. And so I'm hoping the audience actually ask questions, and because I think the more that's transparent, the more people will trust the AI.
Since this research was funded by TRC4, which is the Trauma Research and Combat Casualty Care Collaborative, I wonder if you're also working to improve care for people on the battlefield.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that it will do is enable care in remote regions faster. So if you can think about somebody who's in a rural area in Texas, that's one application, but it's also an ability for us to think about somebody who's deployed and can we get them the care fastest? This is a system that allows us to learn from trauma broadly in Texas and to use it as an exemplar for applications in the military and applications across the U.S.
And that'll make a difference when it comes to minimizing casualties in the field?
It will make a difference in minimizing casualties by being able to get people the care they need as quickly as possible. And there'll be less manual decision-making in the process of getting that care. So it won't be five different people you're relayed to be able to get you to the right hospital. It'll be, this is the hospital you need to go to, or if you're on the battleground, this is the location that can best serve you, and this is how you should get there, whether it's helicopter or whether it's by a convoy or a car.
All right, so that won't be a while. We're at the very early stages of all this. So how do you see this project playing out going forward?
I see iRemedy Act as providing a tool that is a pioneer in the area of augmenting clinical decision-making in trauma care to be able to minimize time for care and to maximize outcomes and improve quality of life. And so the first 16 months is us developing the framework and proving that we have a really good demo and prototype. And then having it adopted, like you said, when is it going to be used? When is it going to save lives? Can we show that and demo that?
And when you can show that and demo that, what do you expect it to look like? Like, how do you expect it to work?
I believe it will speed up the care and allow people to have much better care. So really augmenting the ability of the first responders and the clinicians to give people the best care. And I envision in the future, it also will be that an individual will be able to see how their care was handled. Because as we're developing these tools and the new data sets, we have the ability to start to make things more transparent to the public, who really should be the ones who own, you know, their data and understand how their care was handled. So AI has that ability to make things more visible. I know it's often critiqued as being more like a black box and less visible. At the same time, it has this opportunity to make things more transparent.
So when you filter all that down to that vulnerable person, you know, by the side of the road in need of care, what does that mean?
It would mean that for someone like my father, that he would have had a full recovery. That would be an example of this has really been a great technology. And it would also be for somebody, like you mentioned, like somebody had a car accident. Oh, they had the best recovery they could have. And they were happy with their own care and they could see. It's transparent to them that their care was handled in the optimal way. Those would be two really key examples. So it's saving lives and saving quality of life.
That is an excellent goal. Thank you so much, UTSA Associate Professor and Researcher Dr. Amina Kutub, who will rejoin us in a few weeks to talk about how AI might be able to improve the quality of life for people who are chronically ill but have never been able to get a diagnosis for anything or appropriate care. Can AI play Dr. House? Dr. Kutub has thoughts and we'll talk to her about them soon. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jake Brazzati, TPR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me, and was edited by Yvette Benavides. I wrote the show, and Jacob Rosati composed all the music and created the sound design. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petrie. Talk to you soon.